Looking to wake up feeling truly rested? Discover the difference of Tempur. Available now at Harvey Norman. Crafted with Tempur material, Tempur mattresses precisely adapt to your body's shape, weight, and temperature, helping to relieve pressure and reduce tossing and turning for a more restful night's sleep. Choose from the Tempur Ease collection, the cooling comfort of Tempur Breeze, or experience the ultimate in luxury with the Tempur Pro Lux Adapt, delivering exceptional body-conforming support and premium comfort, exclusive to Harvey Norman. Complete your sleep sanctuary with a Tempur-adjustable base, including the Aspire Elite 2.0, Ergo 2.0, Ascend and Leora ranges, exclusive to Harvey Norman. Enjoy personalized comfort features including head and foot elevation, massage functions, and relaxing zero-gravity positioning. Experience sleep that's uniquely yours. Visit your local Harvey Norman store today and experience the Tempur difference. Go!
You're listening to SBS News.
When we talk about space junk, what sort of stuff are we actually talking about?
So it can come in all shapes and sizes, from as large as full, you know, intact rocket stages, like the recent example that crashed into the moon, all the way down to pieces of metal, lost tools, hammers, screwdrivers, and even paint flecks. The reason that we care about even something as small as, say, a fleck of paint, is because it is traveling at such incredible speeds that even, say, a screw hitting a spacecraft at orbital speeds has the energy equivalent to a grenade. So it really, even the smallest of items, can cause significant damage.
How much human-made material would you say is currently in space and on the moon, and where is most of it?
So most of it is around the Earth, and in particular in low Earth orbit. So that's essentially where the International Space Station is, that kind of a distance. There's close to 10,000 tons of material up there, and the real challenge is we actually don't have a complete accounting or census of it. We can see those larger pieces, but the smaller pieces, potentially hundreds of millions of small pieces the size of screws or smaller, are incredibly difficult to see, as you might imagine. So essentially, we just estimate what the number of those smaller pieces are. In other words, there's an enormous amount of material up there that is becoming ever harder to track, and the challenge is that once those pieces start to collide with each other, they produce more junk, which is even harder to track, and the whole process snowballs. We have a thing called the Kessler syndrome. Don Kessler, from back at NASA many decades ago, predicted that essentially you would reach a tipping point where so much junk was up there that it would all be crashing into each other. And you get this runaway snowball avalanche effect, if you will, of just increasing amounts of junk colliding, producing ever more junk, and eventually turning certain regions above our heads into just swarms of debris that present a danger to travel, for spacecraft to travel through or satellites to orbit within.
And how close would you say we're getting to that tipping point?
Some academics have actually claimed, at least in certain regions, we've actually already reached that point. I think it's fair to say that most of us expect, without remedial action, so in other words, without us actively removing debris, so spent rockets or defunct satellites from their orbit, that it is just a matter of time, whether it's a few years or another decade or two, but we will start to lose access to certain regions of space because it just becomes too dangerous to operate within. That's inevitable. I mean, that's the really, I guess, the scariest thing about space junk. If we don't start to clean it up and start to encourage companies to deorbit their satellites, to take perhaps active steps to remove older materials up there, particularly the larger pieces, before they get broken up, before they collide and produce these just gigantic amounts of material, we will lose access to these orbits. And so much of our prosperity, our security, depends. The ability to have Starlink global internet, communications coverage, the ability to have Earth observation for improved weather monitoring, for disaster relief, and particularly post-flood or post-bushfire, those kinds of insights only can be made from space. And if we don't start to actively remove this junk, we might lose the ability to have the satellites there just when we need them.
And what efforts are underway to clean up this debris, if any? Is anyone actually doing anything about it yet?
Yeah, look, there's a lot of exciting ideas. So there's a company in Australia. So Australia's EOS actually has a laser-based system in the first instance to let you better see the debris, so track it better and then hence get out of its way. That's actually the best way to get to avoid the debris is to see it, to track it better and then move your satellite or you know, astronauts out of the way of danger. The next step in that though is then to use the same kind of laser systems to actually start to burn the junk and slow it down and encourage it to deorbit. The cleanest way to get rid of space junk is to have it burn up in the atmosphere. There are other efforts where the Europeans, for example, have a system of a harpoon and another with a net where they basically try to tackle those larger pieces of junk, grabbing hold of them through a harpoon or through the net, and then slowing it down with a rocket, essentially firing in the opposite direction to its travel, the space junk, and slowly, as you slow it down, it then gets ever closer to the Earth. It experiences more of the upper atmosphere, feeling that drag effect and slowing down ever further and very rapidly then burning up. And NASA has a new call out for essentially tethering systems or where you have a satellite actually make connection with another satellite, a physical connection, and in that way then grabbing hold of it and pulling it down. It's a bit dangerous. These junk can tumble around. It can be very hard to safely get hold of it. So this is probably only for those kinds of satellites that are nearing the end of their lives but are still in control. So we have all of these ideas and solutions, but the problem is we are putting up thousands of pieces of new satellites, new infrastructure in orbit, which is fantastic to see the development. But at the same time, a lot of our solutions are talking about ones and twos while the population up there grows near exponentially. So we have to start to also encourage these companies to deploy in orbits that will decay quickly if you ever lose control of the junk of your satellite, and particularly to encourage rocket providers to design their systems or their orbits to avoid putting large pieces of junk that are essentially out of control in orbits very far from those. Very far from essentially the Earth, where it will take hundreds, if not thousands of years for that piece to naturally return to Earth to essentially deorbit. The problem is all of these systems are essentially require national governments to, these international systems, excuse me, require in the national government to tell the industry to essentially adopt these processes. And we are in a race. There's incredible imperative for countries to build out their space capabilities, to put more assets in space, to grow their own economies, to gain opportunities for better defense intelligence or other systems. In other words, there's a lot of pressure to do things, to do more and to do more quickly, and particularly where regards the moon. That's where we need governments to have these kinds of conversations at the international level that recognize that we all lose if we lose the ability to use space, that it doesn't help anyone if we're in a rush to get satellites up there, but in doing so, we end up causing space junk, the Kessler syndrome to be triggered, then we've all lost. And we really need, I think, governments to take the lead in this because, individual companies can try, but they have shareholders to answer to as well. It really needs government legislation to ensure that these companies in particular are behaving in the best possible way to preserve space.
The recent SpaceX rocket impact has been one that's really attracted headlines in recent days. Can you talk a little bit about what happened there and what the takeaways should be from that?
The upper section, of a SpaceX Falcon 9. This is a reusable rocket, but that upper section was absolutely not intended to hit the moon. That was just pure chance that it was in an orbit that intersected. It did so at such speeds that it would kick up potentially a lot of the material from the lunar surface. From a scientific point of view, that's quite interesting. Our telescopes can then see that material kicked up and analyze the makeup of that lunar surface. But beyond that, it's really been a very valuable reminder for the wider public that there are huge amounts of material up there that are out of our control, and that essentially we're treating the space and potentially the moon as essentially a waste dump, that we are not being mindful enough about the kinds of materials that we are leaving up there, and particularly where it intersects with the moon. There was never a safety risk in any way, but I think it was a good reminder to us all about what might seem almost a science fiction challenge. I mean, waste, worrying about polluting the moon's surface seems like something out of Star Trek, right? Like, this is something that is now happening. And we need to recognize that there's not a lot of binding rules beyond what the launch nation, as in the nation from which the rockets launch, can do. I mean, it is the responsibility of the launch nation to have these providers operate safely, but also, I think, responsibly. We've seen many, essentially all of the major space players adopt these similar commercial mindset. I think this is good from a technological development point of view. I think this is positive from exploration. I think we have to also, as with all of these exciting things, balance it with responsible development. And that's something incidents like this lunar collision will encourage the public to be more mindful of. And then hopefully, through public interest, comes government action.
Looking to wake up feeling truly rested? Discover the difference of Tempur. Available now at Harvey Norman. Crafted with Tempur material, Tempur mattresses precisely adapt to your body's shape, weight, and temperature, helping to relieve pressure and reduce tossing and turning for a more restful night's sleep. Choose from the Tempur Ease collection, the cooling comfort of Tempur Breeze, or experience the ultimate in luxury with the Tempur Pro Lux Adapt, delivering exceptional body-conforming support and premium comfort, exclusive to Harvey Norman. Complete your sleep sanctuary with a Tempur adjustable base, including the Aspire Elite 2.0, Ergo 2.0, Ascend, and Leora Rangers, exclusive to Harvey Norman. Enjoy personalized comfort features including head and foot elevation, massage functions, and relaxing zero gravity positioning. Experience sleep that's uniquely yours. Visit your local Harvey Norman store today and experience the Tempur difference. Go!